Welcome to the most listened to golf in the world, the Fairways of Life show, on air, online, and around the world, with the most candid interviews, unforgettable stories, taking you beyond the ropes. Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author, Matt Adams.
Absolute delight to have your company, folks. Hope you guys are doing well. We are joined again today with an absolute legend in the game of golf, a multiple-time major champion, a person that very much has defined the game of golf as we know it today. What's interesting when I state it that way is the different ways that this individual has impacted the game of golf. I'll go through some of the CV for you to decide for yourself. A 10-time winner on the PGA Tour, as I mentioned, a 2-time major champion, twice representing the United States and Ryder Cup team. This person, this is when I give it away, you know who it is, right? Was the 1991 captain of the United States Ryder Cup team. Yes, I am talking about Dave Stockton. To just tell you a little bit more about his resume, he was a winner 25 times amongst the professional ranks, 10 of those, as I mentioned, on the PGA Tour. The 1970 PGA Championship was his. So too was the 1976 PGA Championship. He was a runner-up at the Masters in 1974. He was a runner-up at the U.S. Open in 1978. He had 8 major championship top tens to his credit. Those Ryder Cup teams, 1971 and 1977. 14 PGA Tour champions wins. He's a 3-time senior major champion. 599 PGA Tour starts to his credit. 436 PGA Tour champion starts to his credit for 1,035 career starts, and he had 128 top 5 combined finishes within that. Think about that as a percentage already. That is pretty darn good, and it's always great to have the company of Dave Stockton. Hello, Mr. Stockton. How you feeling, my friends? Good to see you.
I'm doing good, Matt. Great to be with you. Been a while.
Let me, if you would, start first of all with the putting. And you and I have spoken about this in public forums. We've spoken about this in private forums a million times over the years. And to the point that you usually get a little bit exasperated with me because I'm trying to find the secret to putting, where you usually tell me the secret to putting is to not try. Are you still going to tell me the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if you try, you're going to take more time. You see it every week. I mean, I see it in guys that I used to work with, and the way we've always taught, and you well know it, is I want to teach you so you can teach yourself. I don't want you to have to take lessons all the time. I want you to go out and enjoy the game. And for some reason or other, people tend to, if it's an important putt or something's really important to them, they're going to take more time, and they think trying harder is going to unlock it. And trying harder just locks you up. And that's why the boys and I have called our method the signature approach to putting. And we have you sign your signature, takes about 3 or 4 seconds. Then we ask you to see the signature you just signed, your own signature, and take 15 to 20 seconds and make it exactly the same. Well, they can't even do the first letter, because as soon as you try, you stiffen up. And I always relate it to other sports, and as somebody that's shooting pool isn't going to step up beside the cue ball and practice stroke for 5 or 6 times to get the feel and step in behind it. But a golfer does, takes these practice strokes he thinks is really important, gets the putter behind the ball, and now that thing dies for most people. There are a few people that putt fast like I do, just let it go. It's either going to go in or it's not going to go in, and if you try, it isn't going to work.
Is that the reason why you've been promoting for years, don't take a practice swing, step up, trust your instinct and go? I did just see a recent report. An expert came out and said, well, if you take a practice swing, you're 95% less likely to make the putt from there. But you've been saying this simple message forever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, some people, there's fast players. I'm fast. Lenny Watkins was fast. There's slower players like Jack that, you know, get set. Tiger's in the middle somewhere. But I always felt that if you had an opportunity, you would try to go a little bit quicker and let it go. Not a fast stroke or anything, but just your process. If you're throwing a dart at a board, you're looking at the bullseye. The bullseye for a putter is the hole in the green, where the hole's cut. I mean, you look at it, how many things, it's not calculus. It's not that serious. It's not cancer. It's nothing like that. Pick your line and let it go. And if you expect to make it, if you stand behind the ball as you walk into it, and you can see where it's going to fall in the hole, whether it's coming in at 4 o'clock or 7 o'clock, if it's breaking right, whatever. If you see that, you got a good chance of making it. But most people don't even see it. They try to get it over with because they don't feel comfortable putting. And a lot of times it's their routine, or a lot of times it's the putter that doesn't fit them. I mean, there's all various things. And Matt, the one thing that you get to in the end is the fact that our job, my job, and the boys' job as instructors is to look at you and figure out how to make you comfortable. Speed you up, slow you down, more practice strokes, less practice strokes. Maybe Annika is a great example. Annika had to have a practice stroke. And finally, I got her where she'd take the practice strokes behind the ball, looking down the line at the hole, and she took how many of her practice strokes she wanted. But when she walked into it, it was a flowing motion. She let the putter go. And she, well, the 2 years prior to us working, she'd won twice. In the 18 months after we worked, she'd won 10. What'd she win? She won like 18 times. I mean, she was unbelievable. All because of a little setup change. So you never know. I mean, you go into all sorts of people. Weisskopf, when he came out and played the Legends Tournament with me and Johnny Miller up in Minnesota, and he first time he played, and he was all excited and everything, and he asked me, what did I tell people when I explained putting and tried to teach? I said, well, it's all different, Tom, because we tell her we don't have a set method. And I said, by the way, are you talking about other people? Are you talking about yourself? And it was comical. Look at me, and he goes, me. And I said, okay, I wanted to tell you this for 40 years. When you put your second finger of your left hand down, covering all your right hand, because you want this left hand to go. In reality, that creates tension, and you can't, there's no way you're going to go through. You're just going to stop your left hand, finger down or not. And so I just told him, I just overlapped the one finger, so I get feel, there's no tension. And I had him putt first because I didn't want him to watch Johnny's practice. You know, Johnny putts, and his stroke is not the world's greatest, one of the best ball strikers I ever played with, but not necessarily putting. And Weisskopf putted first. He made 11 birdies. And finished the round, and he said, why didn't you tell me this 40 years ago? And I said, well, why in the heck didn't you help me with my golf swing 40 years ago? and we had a good laugh together because, you know, if somebody asked me something, I want them to play the best they could play. I didn't care who they were, but I, you know, and many times during a round when I should have been penalized, I'd say, when we get through, I want to help you with something. Well, within a hole, they're going to say, well, now, what are you going to tell me after the round? And so here I am in the middle of competition telling somebody something that's going to help him or hurt him, but at least for the holes I watch him, I'll know by the end of the round whether it did help, and so will he. So it's been a neat journey. I mean, I've enjoyed the competition immensely. I'm a very competitive person, obviously, but the knack and the way my dad taught me, and I didn't know that Alex Morrison was the one that taught him in the 30s until, you know, 27 years after dad died, and Matt Rudy and I wrote the putting book together in 2010. And when I read this book that was written in 1940, it was still viable in 2010. The long game portion of it, the 120 of 140 pages, wasn't. But the putting was still 95% because nobody's figured it out yet. They figured out the long game as you watch the guys play now, but still you see the difficulty on the putting greens. And it is, it's a lot of what you said. It's all this taking time and trying.
It's absolutely fascinating because when you think about what Dave Stockton is telling us here, folks, and think about the greatest ball strikers in the world today, and think about how many of those great ball strikers struggle when it comes to putting. He said they still haven't figured it out. He has. We're going to continue with Dave Stockton right after this. The Fairways of Life show is presented in part by the PGA Tour Superstore, the number one golf retailer in the land because of their big, beautiful stores. Yes, where if you need it, you can find it within, but I think it's their people that make the true difference. They are professionals. You can shop with the pros at your happy place.
place.
Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous links courses and our world-famous parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
It screams. It tracks. It's soft. It reacts. It is the Bridgestone Tour B with a game-changing reactive cover designed to spring faster off your driver and stick longer to your wedges. Try Bridgestone's Tour Bs, the Tour Ball reinvented.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team, the absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try these. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Bo, you're gonna need the right equipment company.
I think I got that.
You know, Tour Edge backs all their clubs with a lifetime warranty.
I know.
They ship all their premium custom clubs in 48 hours.
I know.
All their premium clubs are hand-built in the USA.
I know.
You know, Tour Edge has won 35 times out here.
Guys, I know.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to BoyneGolf.com.
Welcome back to the Fairways of Life Show. Pleasure to have your company this week of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Our guest today is Dave Stockton, legend. I mentioned to you that Dave Stockton was second at the 1974 Masters. He ended up finishing, it was a tie for second, but he ended up finishing two strokes behind Gary Player. He won the 1970 PGA Championship at Southern Hills in Tulsa, and that was by a two-stroke victory over Bob Murphy and Arnold Palmer. He won the 1976 PGA Championship at Congressional. That was by one stroke, and that was over Don January and Raymond Floyd. If you're noticing a trend here, it's legends wove through. He was tied for second at the 1978 U.S. Open, too, at Cherry Hills Country Club, a classic and legendary venue, but that was by one stroke over Andy North. When you were captain of the 1991 United States Ryder Cup team and your famous victory at Kiawah Island, do you think that that Ryder Cup changed the course of every Ryder Cup that has followed? Was that the beginning of something new?
Maybe it's the first time it played out, because we hadn't had the cup back in 6 years. And 4 years prior to that, when Nicklaus got beat on his own golf course in Muirfield, due to his own fault, I mean, he was the one that pursued this thing of, okay, we, Great Britain and Ireland, we're kind of getting them every time. And when I played in 71 and 77, it was basically a foregone conclusion under J. A. Barron and St. Louis, and then under Dow Finsterwald and Lytham and St. Anne's in 77. And all of a sudden, Jack has this vision, and Jacqueline played a part in it, I'm sure. We'll play Europe. We'll play, you know, Great Britain and Ireland and Europe, put them all together. And all of a sudden it was, it was an even Steven. And it should have been. If we play here, we should be favored. And if you play over there, and you've seen it in the last two. You saw us win at Whistling Straits under Steve Stricker's leadership. And then we go over there and play in Rome. Phenomenal venue, great job. But it was almost no matter what Zach Johnson did, the Europeans were destined to win. And I would not be betting on the Europeans to succeed when we come back to Bethpage Black here in 2 years. So it's been a yes, Kia was important because Jack loses and then Raymond ties, had a hell of a job, but it tied 2 years prior, so we hadn't seen the cup in 6 years. And yeah, we got it back. And it was very close, obviously. It would not have been close if we hadn't had the limo wreck, and I would have been able to play Steve Pate the whole time. But you never know. I mean, it's amazing how tight these things are. And I think it changed it. I think one of the ones that really affected it, and, you know, I've been a part of four Ryder Cups, two I played, one that I captained, the other that Azinger honored me by picking me as an assistant captain at Valhalla in 2008. Which I still think is probably the best captaining job that I have ever seen, because he changed the number of people that you could pick to be on your team, the number of help you could get on the course. He had three help, and he had this pod system of separating them into three or four man pods, and it totally exposed Faldo at that time in 2008. So it's progressed. I was very proud to. Well, when I first got the captaincy, I thought I was going to be doing a PGA West in California, mm-hmm. only to find out because of financial reasons, and they were going to televise. It's going to be the first wall-to-wall television of a Ryder Cup in America, and they had to have it on the East Coast. You'd have the time zone in Europe be able to be, you know, watching this unfold. So we go to a course that nobody had seen, and it was an unbelievable venue, and Kathy and I were just honored to be picked to do it. It's the highlight of my career. I mean, they raise the flag and you play for it, and I'm very proud of the fact that I've participated in four Ryder Cups and I've never been on a losing team. Unfortunately, there are not many Americans that could say that now.
When Lanny was on with us recently, he alluded to a mentality, a kind of good old boys network where players wanted to be with their friends in the locker room instead of perhaps maybe having a mechanism where the best players, hottest players at the moment are playing on the team, regardless of whether you go out to dinner with them or not. Do you think that might be an accurate depiction of making a United States team, regardless of which side of the pond they're playing on, stronger?
I would hope so. There was a quartet of guys, myself included, that every time we saw each other, we talked about the Ryder Cup and what we would do if and when we were captain. And that happened to be Payne Stewart, Lanny Watkins, myself, and Paul Azinger. And a lot of great things came out of the discussions we had. And I profiled my team. I can't speak for the other players. I know Corey Pavin, who followed me, basically came up and, coming up when he was accepted to be the Ryder Cup captain later on in the 2000s, he said to me, well, I'm just going to make a few changes. I said, oh, I know what it was. It was right after Azinger, because I said, Corey, don't do anything till you talk to Paul, because Paul got this completely correct. And Paul did his to Ron Braun. I used Deborah Graham, but I profiled every player. So I knew, and as Paul said to me, he said, I can't talk to Phil Mickelson the way I talk to Anthony Kim. You've got to make your message fit the person. And that's what in personalities, guys want to play with their friends, but that's not necessarily the best way, because we've seen some where you put two superstars together and they just don't mesh. And it's a funny way to do it. But I spent a year and a half profiling by players and having a good feel and grasp of who was going to play the best. And some of them didn't expect to play where I put them, but every one of them performed really well.
Dave, 86 men have two or more major championships, only 86. Every opportunity that I have when I talk about the World Golf Hall of Fame, my message is always the same. Put in Dave Stockton. a multiple-time major champion, a successful Ryder Cup captain. What you have given back to the game on the putting side alone is immeasurable. How does it impact you when you think about your career and your life and the fact that you're not in the Golf Hall? And I'm bringing it up because you brought it up earlier in this show. Are there any thoughts relative to that now?
Well, there's hurt involved because I think I have accomplished enough, just barely. You know, right on the screen there, you list 10 PGA wins. I actually had 11, at least for 15 years after the second tournament I ever won, the same year in 67 as Colonial. I won with Laurie Hammer, my good friend from the University of Florida. And we won at La Costa. Trevino was in the field. It was an alternate shot event. And for 15 years, the tour counted it. And then all of a sudden, they don't count it. But now they play an alternate shot event in New Orleans, and they're counting it as official again. So I'm confused by that. But I'm on the minimum when you only have that many wins. The majors, yes, I have enough major wins and stuff. And I've done other things. And I would have been much safer if I'd have won 18 or 20, but then I would have given up a lot of the corporate outing and the intermixing with people that I knew I was growing the game by doing. I mean, I still played a full schedule. Geez, the first year on the Champions Tour, I played, I think, 30, I don't know exactly, but I'm going to say it was between 32 and 35 events. And you alluded to the fact most of those were top five because it's a smaller field, and I got the field back, my game back. But I don't know. It's like I never could figure out why Larry Nelson was not a Ryder Cup captain. I mean, under no circumstances, somebody blackballed him, and I feel really bad because he and Gail deserve to have the advantage to lead the American team to victory. I mean, he's the most successful Ryder Cup player I've ever seen. Three majors to his credit, two of the PGA, and the PGA is the one that picked in that time who the captains were. So, yeah, there's some regrets. I mean, I think the other people, my family and stuff, it means more to them. It's not going to mean as much when I'm gone and if I'm not in, but there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, I'm happy with what I've done. I'm glad that I can still at 82 be active because I feel like I'm active. I don't feel 82, and we just keep going on.
Yeah, it's incredible the amount of energy that you have. Being that this is the week of the Arnold Palmer Invitational, to wrap up here today, I wonder if because you played against him throughout the heart and your prime of your prowess, why is Arnold Palmer so important to the game of golf?
Because he endorsed the people. He embraced the people. it goes through all of our minds that have won majors. Okay, I'm going to be the next Arnold Palmer, or I'll be the next Jack Nicklaus or something. Well, in Arnold's case, Arnold's the one you wanted to be, and then all of a sudden you'd watch him and how he interacts with the fans, and he can give all this time. And I see a lot of that in the younger guys. Some of the younger guys get it, for sure. But there's so many that are very stoic, and they don't – it's like it's an office to them. And it is our office. I mean, that's where we do our work, but – You got to enjoy it as you go. And there's nothing Arnold didn't enjoy. Some of the greatest pictures. In fact, the outing that we just completed in Indian Wells, we went to the Arnold Palmer restaurant in La Quinta. And we sat in the Palmer room, all his memorabilia. I had to smile inwardly because he has four trophies along the back wall of this. He's got the British Open. He's got the U.S. Open, he's got the Masters, and he's got the United States Amateur. What he's missing is what I have two of, and that was the PGA trophy, especially the one that when I beat him the first time at Southern Hills in Tulsa in 70. And Kathy's 8 months pregnant with Ronnie, and she never left the clubhouse. And I'm out there trying to compete against him with not one person in that gallery rooting for me, I don't think, because if Arnold wins, he wins the Grand Slam. And it's a little bit like Rory coming into Augusta, needing the Grand Slam. He's got to win the Masters. Arnold needed to win the PGA, and he came close in 68 when Boris beat him. And then I was lucky enough to stay ahead of him at Southern Hills. But the feeling you get from him, he was so kind to everybody. He wasn't, when you played with him, he was tough. I tell you one thing, Matt, when you played with him, you sure as hell didn't mark your golf ball. Because Arnold, if he putted out, those people were gone. And you got all this confusion trying to make your 2 or 3 footer or 4 footer, whatever you had left. I always putted out. You know, it was just what you learn when you play with some of these guys. You got to learn what they do so you can handle the pressure that surrounds them.
Amazing. If you could go back in time with everything that's going on in the game right now, if you could go back in time, would you want to be playing golf right now, Dave Stockton, or would you trade it, or would you keep the time period in which you competed?
Oh my God, no. I would not change anything. And even some of the guys that preceded us, they didn't play for any money. I mean, I'm watching now, if on some of these elevated events, the guy that finishes third is going to make more money, because I made $1.7 million in 27 years of playing on tour, including 74 when I won 3 times LA Quad Cities and the Sammy Davis Hartford, and finished 6th on the money list, and I had $160,000. So wow. When you're looking down the rankings and who you think was good and who you think was bad, I look at a couple of different things that is important to me, is the fact that I got to play at a great time. I won some courses. The list alone to me is so impressive, to have won at Riviera and Colonial and Firestone and Congressional, Canterbury, Cherry Hills. I mean, I've played well at a lot of these great, great golf courses, short, long, and then in between. So yeah, I have no regrets on that. And I know I played in the right time. This Liv has thrown a monkey wrench into this whole thing. And now we discover who's going to play for money. Why are they playing? I mean, I don't know how you need that much money, but I would rather hold a PGA trophy and a Masters trophy or a trophy from Colonial than play a 3-day pro-am and think I want to get world ranking points playing against a select field. And so I'm sitting here watching the tour now, and I'm hoping he's a relative, this Jake Knapp, because my mother's maiden name was Knapp, and that's my middle name. And I have no idea if I'm related to this guy, but he's got a first now and a great finish there at Bay Hill this last week, or not Bay Hill, at West Palm. And I'm excited as heck. The amateur, the one out here at Palm Springs in the American Express, I think the golf is in a great spot, with the exception of Greg Norman having this desire for a world tour based on how much money we pay you and not where the titles are. I mean, I don't get it. But and it's hurt golf, there's no question about it. And the sad part about it has really hurt the function of the JC tournaments, let's say like Greensboro or Hartford or the John Deere. All of them are important, but they're like getting priced out of the market because it costs a fortune to become a sponsor of these events. And I just don't like it. I mean, I really don't like it, because I that's why I admire Palmer and Nicklaus so much, because they stood up when I was a rabbit in the 68 and 69 there, when we're going away from the PGA of America and starting the PGA Tour. They could have gone, they had the big three, you add Gary Player, and it should have been the big four adding Billy Casper. They could have gone on their own and the tour could have ended. And until Palmer passed, there's no way Norman had footprint to get this Live started. But now we have a bunch of guys that are working for Saudi Arabia, and I don't get it. I think our charities in America are worth a whole lot more than selling out the way some of these guys have done. I don't blame them. They made a ton of money. But you're not playing for history now.
Dave Stockton, always absolutely full of probing insights and experiences through a absolutely remarkable career. My friend, it's great to catch up with you. I'm glad that you are well and the family as well, and that you're full of energy. Doesn't surprise me in that latter point, but thank you nonetheless for all of the time that you've given us today. It's always a pleasure.
It's great, man. I don't want to leave without mentioning one thing. I think, you know, I've had a lot of highlights in my life, but one of the best ones ever was spending the time in the tower with you at Congressional when I'd just been only working with Rory 5 months, and he had blown the Masters, came into Congressional, and had the putting figured out. And I'm sitting in that tower with you watching these, you know, we were watching the 10th green and we were watching 18 and talking about various things and watching Rory only win by 8. And enjoying your insight, which is I love working with a guy like you or Dave Mard the third. I mean, because the answers you have, you got a historical knowledge of our game, and I know where you come from, and I treasure our time. You can call me anytime. You have questions, and I appreciate taking the time to talk to me this morning.
It was an honor. Thank you very much, Dave. That week, I remember very, very distinctly. We worked together a lot, but that particular week, to be at Congressional where this man won a major championship, and to be looking down on young Rory McIlroy, one of his star pupils, and to have Dave's, we were broadcasting the coverage on ESPN at that point, and to have him explain to me what Rory is doing and watch how it manifests in the way that he was moving, it was stunning. It is stunning, and such an honor to always catch up with Mr. Stockton. Thank you very much for everything, Dave, you have done. When we come back, folks, we're going to go down this road of another legend in Arnold Palmer, and we're going to feature an interview that we did with Mr. Palmer that, while we didn't know it at the time, in retrospect, it was done not long before he passed, and we think it was the last long-form interview that he ever conducted. And the insights that he provides during this time, I like to say, when giants roam, a golden age of the game, is absolutely stunning, too. More of the Fairways of Life show coming up.
Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
It screams. It tracks. It's soft. It reacts. It is the Bridgestone Tour B with a game-changing reactive cover designed to spring faster off your driver and stick longer to your wedges. Try Bridgestone's Tour Bs, the Tour Ball reinvented.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team, the absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try these. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Bo, you're gonna need the right equipment company.
I think I got that.
You know, Tour Edge backs all their clubs with a lifetime warranty.
I know.
They ship all their premium custom clubs in 48 hours.
I know.
All their premium clubs are hand-built in the USA.
I know.
You know, Tour Edge has won 35 times out here.
Guys, I know.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
Zero Friction introduces the Wheel Pro Push Cart Golf Bag with its revolutionary 3-in-1 design, supportive legs that spring into action, a comfort grip handle with three locking positions, accessories for the modern golfer enhanced by 7 pockets for more storage, and removable all-terrain wheels which slide right into place. The new Zero Friction Wheel Pro Golf Bag checks every box for every golfer. Push, carry, or cart, the decision is yours thanks to Zero Friction. Head to ZeroFriction.com today.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Fairways of Life show. Great catching up with Dave Stockton. You know, it was like yesterday having Bernhard Langer around. I'm not so much interested in whether you do or do not agree with their opinions. We just want their opinions. This is important. It's important to hear from people. You know, we're not living in a golf world right now where everybody is going to agree, but we can live in a golf world where it's okay for people to express their opinion and we don't jump all over them. That's their opinion. It can begin and end right there. It was great to hear his insight and historical perspective. Nobody has a better historical perspective than Arnold Palmer did during his remarkable life. So as you heard me mention just before we went to that break, we had this chance to sit down with Mr. Palmer. Now, this is only half the interview that you're going to be seeing and hearing this morning. If you go to the Fairways of Life YouTube channel, you can see it in its entirety because this one is a time capsule of a very, very remarkable man.
When you have quiet times to reflect, to sit in front of a fireplace perhaps and just relax, where does your mind go? What are the times that you look back on and reflect?
Well, of course, I usually remember the good times we had, the golfing days, the things that I did with my father and mother. And they are all things that are very pleasant, things that I love, whether it's skiing down the hill or ice skating or playing golf. They were all things that were very pleasant. And today I enjoy remembering them.
When you go back to Augusta National, one of the things I've been dying to ask you about is the Champions Dinner. Can you remember your first Champions Dinner?
Oh, yes. And of course, I remember most of the people that were there. And there wasn't a large crowd. It was very limited. And it was wonderful. Sarsen was there for sure. And Bob Jones was one of my favorites, and he was there. And it was nice to talk to him, to talk to these people, because it was my first dinner. And to hear them and listen to them tell stories about how some of the other golfers played, and guys like Claude Harmon, and guys that were really known for what they did and how they played was fun.
Was there anyone over those years and since, was there anyone that you in particular wanted to sit next to at this Champions Dinner because you knew it would be entertaining?
Well, no, but I enjoyed Cary Middlecoff, and Byron Nelson was one of my very favorites of all time. I think that he might have been the best that I ever had the opportunity to know and to talk to, and he talked to me about things that he has done and he did, and those are things that I'll never forget.
That is impressive. What was Bob Jones like to be around?
Bob Jones was a great guy. He was one that talked and didn't mind talking. I remember he watched me make a putt on one of the holes during a match, and it was about an 8-footer. And when I finished, he came over to me and he said, "Arn," he says, "let me tell you something." He says, "if I ever have a putt for my life, I'm going to come and get you to putt it for me."
That just sent a chill through.
Isn't it fun? Yeah, it's fun.
I want to, if I may, I want to ask you about some historic figures in the game and your recollection and reaction to them. Walter Hagen.
Walter Hagen was also a very close friend, and I corresponded with him. He was the first man that I talked to after I won the Open, and he called me on the phone and congratulated me, and what a thrill that was. And then I got to know him. I've met with him a number of times, and he said, "Now, Arnie," a couple things he said that were very pointed. He said, "When I die," he says, "I want you to remember that I ask you to be a pallbearer for me." And, you know, things like that that were, and he was sick at the time. And of course, he thrilled me to death with his things that he told me, and And as a matter of fact, I was a pallbearer in the Walter Hagen funeral.
Wow. Dow Finsterwald.
One of my best friends ever. Dow and I have been close since we played, well, amateur golf and then professional golf, and we traveled together all over the world. And he was a very close personal friend that I'm very proud to say we've been friends all our lives.
Sam Snead.
Sam Snead is a guy that you never get real close to Sam, but he and I were buddies because we played on a lot of teams together. And he was a guy that he never forgot anything. And of course, I remember that. And he was a good guy. He didn't waste words too much. He said what he had on his mind and got on with it.
I've talked to you in the past about your relationship with Ben Hogan, and in my reflection on it, I would describe it as complicated. Is that fair?
Well, I suppose that's fair. Hogan and I wouldn't ever call the relationship really close, although we were partners and we talked a lot, but we were never real close buddies. Mm-hmm. Hogan never called me by my name. It was always, "Hey, you," or "Fella," or something like that, which I objected to a little bit.
How about Gary Player?
Gary and I are very close. We were close all our lives. We played Big Three golf, and we did a lot of things together, a lot of shows, a lot of golf, and something that I think that will last forever.
Of course, I have to ask you about Jack Nicklaus.
Well, Jack is a good friend. He is a personal friend, and he's a guy that I can appreciate and understand very well and enjoy being with.
There were a couple players that golf lost in recent months that I wanted to ask you about. One that you're directly, both that you're directly tethered to. The first, Cal Nagel, who passed away, of course, which takes us back to the 1960 Open Championship. And I wonder if you could speak to that man for a second.
Well, Cal was the guy that kept me from winning the Open at St. Andrews, and he played very well, and I knew him pretty well, and he was a really nice man. He's one of the nicest men that I have had an association with in the game of golf. And I enjoyed our relationship, the fact that we spent time together and competed against each other many times, and he was a guy that I will always remember.
Mr. Billy Casper, of course, passed away recently.
Well, Bill Casper was a good friend also, even though we didn't spend a lot of time together. We played competitively all of our active life, and Bill was a much better player than anybody gave him credit for being. He played the game very well and was a good guy. He was a good guy and a good friend to me.
When you look at the game today, and you've described it to me in the past that players today are very physical, it was the word that you used with me. If you could, through some stroke of magic, if you could have lived and competed in a different time than that which you did, would you take that option? Would you be competing at a different time?
Would I like to be competing at a different time? I'm not sure. I think I had the opportunity to play in the best time of my life. The golfers were good. The Hogans, the Sneeds, the Sarazens, Nelson, Middlecoffs, they were great players. And it was a thrill for me to have played against all of them.
What is the next mountain to climb for Arnold Palmer?
Well, I'd like to see golf continue on the road that it's on. I hear people say golf is falling. I don't think it is. I think it's just pausing right now for a little get back to it again. And I think that we will see these young people that are coming along will make a great difference in the game of golf in the years to come.
Are you impressed with the young players today?
I am very impressed by some of them. Yes, they're very good.
If there was one thing in today's game, the golf game today, you could change, what would that one thing be?
I suppose that I'd leave the game alone. I'd try to speed it up a little bit. I think that would be something that we could use very much in the game now to get these young people to play a little quicker. And for the rest of it, I think it's very good.
Years and years from now, Mr. Palmer, what do you want the legacy of Arnold Palmer to be?
Well, I suppose just that I have made a contribution to the game to help make it a little better.
You have that, sir. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Truly, truly incredible stuff from that interview with Mr. Palmer. As I mentioned, that is only half of the interview. You can find the full interview on the Fairways of Life YouTube channel. When you're on there, please subscribe so you're a part of all of the content that we post on there, and you know when it comes out as far as giveaways and trips and all that goes along with it. The Fairways of Life show is presented in part by the PGA Tour Superstore, the number one golf retailer from coast to coast with their big, beautiful stores. You want it, you need it, you can find it within, and you're dealing with professionals that are vested in your best interest in you and your game. Find your happy place at the PGA Tour Superstore.
Yes, hello world, huh?
And with one subtle hello, Tiger began an amazing and unthinkable career.
I've done it for 20 years now with Bridgestone. It allows me to play an aggressive style around the greens, and it's allowed me to win a lot of tournaments.
Bridgestone Golf, proud to be part of your journey.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
I think when you're training for other sports or why most people go to the gym is so that they can like have muscles and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And a lot of the reason why they struggle to play golf is their body doesn't move properly for them to be able to hit a golf ball. And when you're training for golf, it's a little bit different because you're focused more on flexibility and mobility and being strong in motion. When you're able to kind of have a warm up and have a workout routine and kind of gradually build up to where you're training your body to move properly, yeah, you're going to get a lot of big dividends on the golf course.
Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
What if we started a company and the company was under no time constraints, no financial constraints? The one constraint is their clubs had to be exceptional performers and much better than any other alternative. I was told time and again, it'll never work. It worked like a house of fire. And I'll tell you what, I think our customers love it. BXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first of its kind personal caddy. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Order yours and save. Visit zerofriction.com/stride or scan the QR code to order yours today. Stride, your personal caddy.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Fairways of Life show. Coverage of the Arnold Palmer Invitational starts tomorrow at 2 p.m. All these times are Eastern, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Same time on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You can see the times accordingly starting at 12:30 on the NBC Sports family. So news came out in the overnight hours that LIV Golf has withdrawn the request for world ranking points. Rex Hoggard had the story on NBCSports.com. And there are various quotes in there. The first one from, and it apparently Greg Norman had sent a letter out to the golfers at LIV and informed them of the withdrawing of the application. Rex writes, the league requested accreditation with the official World Golf Rankings in July 2022, but last October, ranking officials denied that request because, quote, they're just not playing in a format where they can be ranked equitably with the other 24 tours and thousands of players trying to compete on them, close quote. Peter Dawson, chairman of the ranking board, told the Associated Press at that time. Norman wrote in his letter, and I'm quoting, this is not a decision that we made lightly. After spending the last 18 months in almost constant dialogue with various members of the OWGR Technical Committee and Board, it is now clear that the best way forward for LIV as a league and you as LIV golfers is not through the current ranking system. A resolution which protects the accuracy, credibility, and integrity of the official World Golf Rankings no longer exists, close quote, from Greg Norman. He carried on by saying, we have made enormous efforts to fight for you and to ensure your accomplishments are recognized within the existing ranking system. Unfortunately, the OWGR has shown little willingness to productively work with us. This is all from Rex Hoggard's article that you can find at NBCSports.com. Norman also called for an independent ranking that recognizes how the game is, quote, expanding and modernizing, close quote, and said he plans to, quote, seek meaningful communication and relationship with each of the majors to ensure that LIV golfers are fairly represented, close quote. There are just four players from LIV Golf ranked inside the top 50 in the world. Number 3, John Rahm. Number 17, Tyrrell Hatton. Number 30, Brooks Koepka. Number 50, Cam Smith. And Norman conceded that even if his league were granted ranking points, quote, the system is designed such that it would be functionally impossible for you to regain positions close to the summit of the ranking where so many of you belong, close quote. So that the article continues, but you can find it from Rex Hoggard at NBCSports.com. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay both spoke before the Arnold Palmer Invitational and talked about where the game is at right now and the uncertainty.
I mean, I think it's great that I definitely saw that Joaquin got an exemption in the Masters. I think that's, you know, very well deserved. It's supposed to be a sort of worldwide, it's known to be a worldwide event and sort of global deal of a major, and all of them are, to be honest. So it's good to see the top Chilean out there. To be honest, I mean, I think the criteria was sort of set in front of them, and they, you know, they did everything in their power to get on with OWGR, and it seems that they haven't met the criteria. I mean, I haven't read too much of it, to be completely honest, but it seems that they're not seeing sort of eye to eye on, you know, making an exception to make LIV have world ranking points. So I'm not sure as to why they pulled their application for it, but it is what it is. Fortunately, I'm on the other side of the fence. I'm definitely one of the players, and I just try to play really well and collect as many world ranking points as I can. So whatever that may look like, this is sort of the structure it is right now within the OWGR. So it just seemed like it was a pretty clear thing to start sort of how it was going to look. And unfortunately, they didn't meet the criteria. But the LIV Tour definitely has really good players and players that are in the top 10 or top, you know, 25 in the world. And there's many of them. So they're just sort of unranked right now. But, you know, to me, I do believe they're definitely top ranked players in the world.
Trying to figure out how to appeal to more people and appeal to more fans is probably the biggest change that I would like to see. I think if we can figure out a way to appeal to more people and get more people playing the game, I think when people start playing the game and learn what it's about, that's really an eye opener for people. I have a number of friends that really didn't play golf growing up, and they've gotten in their late 20s or early 30s, and they started playing, and they become addicted to the game. and now they're fans, and now they love playing the game. They're not going and playing football. They're not going and playing basketball, but they love going and playing golf. I think in this new age where people's attention span is less, it's rare to do something in person with your friends for 4 or 5 hours. And I think the more that we can kind of put our phones down and go out and be outside and do something with people that we enjoy, I think that would be better for everyone.
All right, in other news, International President's Cup captain Mike Weir has said that LIV players will not be allowed to play in the President's Cup. He said that certainly I want the best players internationally to be playing in the President's Cup. Hopefully we come to a point where they are, said Weir. It's just unfortunate situation right now. I've been told they are not eligible and they're not going to be eligible. Hopefully going forward, maybe in Chicago 2026, they are. He said, I mean, it's a shame. We would want the best players, but I like our team anyway. That's an article credited to Adam Woodward. So, continues to churn throughout the game of golf. Thank you, nonetheless, for your company, folks. Hopefully, the historic perspective provides some solace on this day. Arnold Palmer Invitational coming up tomorrow.